an administrative matter here within the court, Judge Mayer.
Judge Reyna, I move the admission of John A. Kelly, who is a member of the bar in good standing of the highest court of Virginia. I have knowledge of his credentials and am satisfied that he will possess the necessary qualifications.
Motion, gentlemen, judges?
Granted.
Looks like the motion's been granted. Jack, you've been my clerk for over a year now, and we're going to miss you. You know, you brought great skill and talent to my chambers as a law clerk during the past year, and in addition to your legal acumen, I've really grown to respect and appreciate your discipline. You're a triathlete, you're a marathon runner, running the Boston Marathon a number of times, including this past time. You even got my chambers running, and you got me running. And if you can do that, then that's a big challenge. I've come to respect your legal skills, and I know that you're a great practitioner and student of the law, and I know that you're going to achieve great things, and I expect great things from you, Jack. We have three cases for argument this morning, and we have three cases that are submitted on the brief. The first case is Jackson versus GPO. Counselor Hannon, are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court, and congratulations to Mr. Kelly. I was also moved in by a judge I clerked for, but it was only a one-panel court, one-judge panel at the time that I was moved. I hope he doesn't have a job with the government. I wanted to talk a little bit about Ms. Boulding Reed, who was the woman at the government printing office who gave the instruction and the breathalyzer test, because I think that this entire case revolves around Ms. Reed. The proposal alleged in its last count that Corporal Jackson did not uphold the responsibility of acting favorably to the UPB both on and off duty, and that she participated in an incident involving moral turpitude as a consequence of the allegation that she went to Ms. Boulding Reed and tried to get her, quote, to tell the lieutenant and sergeant that you were in the class and were excused by her since she was already certified. Ms. Boulding Reed believed...
Counselor, your client has... she was removed from her position for various reasons. You know, failure to follow instructions, a lack of candor, and inappropriate conduct.
Yes, sir.
If we find just for one of those reasons, that disposes of the case, correct?
No, it doesn't, because there's no evidence to indicate that the penalty would remain the same. I also believe, Your Honor, that the issue with Ms. Boulding Reed drives all of the other issues, because Ms. Boulding Reed was interviewed three times, gave three statements, and never said that Corporal Jackson tried to get her to say that she was excused. And in fact, when she testified live under oath before the administrative judge, again, all she said was that Corporal Jackson came to her and said, just say yes, when the two supervisors come to her. In her opinion, the administrative judge acknowledges that there was no evidence from Ms. Boulding Reed that she was asked to lie by Corporal Jackson. And the administrative judge ignored the fact that the testimony out of this own woman's mouth belied the allegation. She did not believe that Ms. Jackson was trying to get her to lie, and she said nothing, nor was she asked, whether Ms. Jackson, Corporal Jackson, said to her, tell them that I was authorized to leave early because I already had the class. So the issue for the court is, can the administrative law judge take evidence from this witness, which essentially is the absence of any proof that Corporal Jackson tried to get her to lie, and turn it into the opposite, that she tried to get her to lie by relying on statements of other officials and officers at the government printing office. I would suggest that that notion is taking the flexibility of this administrative proceeding, which allows hearsay, way too far.
Well, what about the other witnesses that were there during the initial conversation with Ms. Bolin Reed, who testified that they did think that Ms. Jackson was coercing Ms. Reed?
Your Honor, if we were in a trial setting where the rules of evidence were being applied, the statements of those witnesses would not be admissible at all because they're pure hearsay. They could only be admitted in an effort to try to impeach the testimony of Corporal Jackson, because Corporal Jackson is the one that allegedly
said... But you
said
if we were in a court of law, but we're not. We're an administrative regime, which that evidence is admissible.
It is admissible, but the question becomes really here. Can you take the sworn testimony of Ms. Boldy Reed, who's the fulcrum of all of this, and who says, you know, I felt frightened and a little coerced by the manner in which Ms. Jackson came in, and turn that into an effort by Ms. Jackson to get her to lie when she didn't say that? That's just taking it too far. You would essentially allow, Your Honor, the officials in the line here, and the evidence is undisputed that they were making book on Corporal Jackson, and the evidence is undisputed from Director Vernon himself that she's a very bright and very good officer. They were making book on her. In this circumstance, can you allow the hearsay statements from these other witnesses to trump what this woman says under oath? And she had three prior statements. In each of those prior statements, she was given the opportunity to say that Ms. Jackson tried to get me to lie. It just didn't happen. And then you buttress that by the fact that one of the lack of candor allegations...
Can I just ask, I mean, why isn't it enough evidence all by itself, this July 11th, 2011 letter from Ms. Bolding Reed? I felt that Corporal Jackson was trying to coerce me into lying or covering up what really happened.
She didn't ask her to lie. The administrative law judge admits there was no evidence that Corporal Jackson tried to get her to lie. She went and said to her, just say yes. That may have been her subjective feeling, but there was zero evidence. In fact, the opposite, that what Corporal Jackson was trying to do, and that's who we're talking about here, that Corporal Jackson was trying to get her to lie. Now, if the allegation were that she was engaging in a threatening activity in the workplace and that Ms. Bolding Reed felt threatened, then that's a different matter altogether. However, the standard for finding misconduct is much, much higher than what occurred here. She had the opportunity three times when interviewed, and a final time when agency counsel had prepared the case in testifying in front of the administrative law judge, and to say, Corporal Jackson told me to tell them that I released her from the class. I excused her from the class because she already had the certification. She never testified to that. That's the allegation. And this is buttressed by the fact that it's obvious that Lieutenant Rivera...
But to what extent are you relying on a distinction between what Corporal Jackson expressly said or expressly did not say versus an inference about the most natural meaning of what she said, just say yes, as understood by the person to which that sentence, just say yes, was directed?
Well, Corporal Jackson had already spoken to Rivera and Solomon, and they had accused her of not going to the class at all. And so Corporal Jackson goes to her and says, when they come to see you, just say yes. She's asking her to tell the truth.
Well, one could draw a different inference because of that word, the expression, just say yes. in context, it could very easily mean, in fact, it feels like it more naturally means, keep your testimony limited so that you only give a favorable answer and then stop.
But the allegation, Your Honor, is that Corporal Jackson told her to say that she had excused her. And there's no evidence of that. That's the allegation. And so we're talking about whether the proof is sufficient to support that. And
well, there were other people at the June 14th meeting when Jackson met with Solomon. Lieutenant Manuel Cubero was there, and that's Solomon's boss, and Officer Edgar James, who's the union representative. So there was other individuals at that meeting, and their testimony is all consistent that they felt that this exchange that Ms. Jackson was trying to coerce Ms. Bowling Reed.
Judge, I would suggest that what they did is when they decided they were going to package charges against Corporal Jackson, they went back and they packaged this as part of the allegations. I understand that Director Vernon was alarmed when Officer James reported to him his version of the conversation with Ms. Bowling Reed.
I mean, Officer James even said the union isn't going to support this type of conduct.
That's a different issue, is whether he fulfilled his fiduciary duty. But so the issue for Director Vernon was whether, in fact, she tried to get Bowling Reed to lie. And there's no evidence of that. And one of the things that I find remarkable here is that at page 2002 of the transcript, Mr. Crowley asked Director Vernon if Ms. Bowling Reed told you...
I'm sorry, what are you reading from, please?
Sir?
Page number, please.
Page 202 of the transcript.
202.
202 of the transcript. At line 13, Mr. Crowley asked Director Vernon, quote, if today Ms. Bowling Reed told you that Jackson did not ask her to say that she was excused from class early, and Corporal Jackson agreed that she did not say that, would that change your decision? And the answer was, no, sir. So you would believe James over both Miss Bolding Reed and Corporal Jackson? Answer, yes, sir. That's the height, in my view, of an arbitrary and capricious decision maker when the person who is alleged to have been the one whose testimony was trying to be fabricated, who was being interfered with, it's almost obstruction of justice, doesn't recite the actual facts of that act.
Counselor, you're into your rebuttal time now. Do you wish to preserve it?
You're
a minute over into your rebuttal time.
I would like to take one more minute to say that I think it's important to understand that one of the allegations of a false statement was that she said that she went to the class at 11:07. And that was the printout of the breathalyzer. Lieutenant Rivera, who's the one that she said this to, knew that the breathalyzer times were inaccurate, so he couldn't possibly have believed when she showed him that breathalyzer time that she was telling him she was there at 11:07. And how can they interpret that to suggest that she went there and was immediately excused? Because there are three times on the breathalyzer, the last time being 11:20. So clearly she was in the class for at least 15 or 20 minutes, and for them to allege that she represented that she was excused from the class in the face of that, I think is a distortion in an effort to try to get rid of a thorn in the side of the director. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counselor Curlin?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Ms. Jackson's appeal in this case invites the Court to do precisely what it has repeatedly said it will not do, which is reweigh the evidence on the record and the credibility determinations that the administrative judge, who had all of the witnesses and all of the evidence in front of her, made in this case. We've cited the Henry case for that point, but you can cite check the Henry case. This court has cited that case over and over and over again for the proposition that under these circumstances, when there is an administrative judge who has had an opportunity to observe all of the witnesses, and in this case there were a lot of witnesses, there were four separate witnesses in three different conversations who watched Ms. Jackson, listened to Ms. Jackson tell this story, first to her supervisors, Sergeant Solomon and Lieutenant Rivera, then her conversation with Ms. Boulding Reed, and then her conversation with Director Vernon. And one of the witnesses, Officer James, who at the time was in the position of being Ms. Jackson's own advocate, watched her go through three iterations of this conversation. All of these witnesses came away with the impression that Ms. Jackson was attempting to excuse her not being at the training when she originally ran into her supervisor by claiming that she had originally been at the training relatively on time and then being excused. So this is not an instance of a mere miscommunication, as Ms. Jackson claimed. I'll break from my initial prepared remarks just to point out an absolutely canonical example of what I'm talking about when I say Ms. Jackson invites this court to reweigh the record. And that is the transcript section that my colleague read to your honors in his opening remarks. That is the transcript session where counsel for Ms. Jackson asked Director Vernon, the deciding official, well, if you didn't have Ms. Boulding Reed's testimony on this, would you still have made the same decision? And he said, absolutely yes. I would believe Officer James, who is in the position of Ms. Jackson's union rep and had absolutely no reason to fabricate his testimony, who consistently testified that this was about Ms. Jackson claiming that she had been excused from class, even if Ms. Boulding Reed claimed otherwise. And he went on to explain that, among other things, that when he spoke to Ms. Boulding Reed, she was shaken, she was frightened, and the term he used was she was shaking like a leaf. And he essentially said, especially given that, certainly I would trust Officer James, who was there and not the target of these instructions, to just say yes, but was able to be a third-party observer and reported consistently with everyone else that she was saying that she had to be excused. And the argument I heard coming from counsel for Ms. Jackson was, well, you shouldn't believe that. That's arbitrary, that's wrong, because you shouldn't have believed Officer James, you should have believed someone else. And that's precisely what this court said, again, it doesn't do. That's reweighing the evidence that was before the administrative judge, who had the opportunity to observe all of these witnesses, determine who was credible. There was certainly an extensive amount of evidence on all of these issues that supported the decision. This isn't an instance, for example, like some of the cases that Ms. Jackson has cited, where, and I'm thinking specifically of the Wade case and the Spurlock case that she cited in her reply brief, where the court said, well, the administrative judge or the decision below relied on one very flimsy piece of evidence, and that doesn't constitute substantial evidence. Here they're saying...
Let me ask you the same question I asked your colleague. If we affirm on, let's say, the candor issue, the lack of candor issue on that charge, does that dispose of the entire case?
I would say, Your Honor,
do we have to affirm all four charges, or
no, Your Honor. Director Vernon, and this is at page A100 of the record. When I say A100, that's our appendix that we filed. Director Vernon, in his decision, indicated that the second two charges, the lack of candor and inappropriate conduct charges, would constitute a sufficient basis to remove Ms. Jackson standing alone. So he didn't rely on one of the charges, he relied on two. As a reminder, one of those two charges, the lack of candor charges, had two specifications, and in order to sustain that charge, only one of those specifications has to be supported. So the
one that he said wouldn't have affected anything was the one about failure to follow the instruction to show up at this training session in the first place.
That's right. He said that was a serious charge, but that the other two standing alone were sufficient. And that's important in the context of the briefing here, because the various harmful error allegations that Ms. Jackson has made in her brief relate to the failure to follow instruction charge. And even though that's a serious charge, it makes the allegations effectively moot, because Director Vernon stated that he would have removed her based on the other two charges. Just focusing on the inappropriate conduct charge, there are a number of ways in which counsel for Ms. Jackson was erroneous in his characterization of the record, so I just wanted to correct those briefly on the record. The first is, he said that Ms. Boulding-Reed didn't say anything to corroborate what the other witnesses said. And that's not entirely true. In the record that Your Honor cited, which is at page A66 of the record, which we would agree amply, among other things, amply supports the agency's determination here, Ms. Boulding-Reed made clear that the issue that Ms. Jackson came to discuss with her, or was telling her that her supervisors were coming to discuss, was what time that she had been at the training. And that's consistent with the story. I mean, certainly there's a room for witnesses to discuss the same type of issues in different ways, and that's the issue of that being about time, or it being about whether she was excused from class. These are all aspects of the story that Ms. Jackson told her supervisors. The second is when we discussed, when counsel discussed that Ms. Boulding-Reed never said that she was told to lie or anything of that nature. Actually, Ms. Boulding-Reed on several occasions indicated that she felt that Ms. Jackson was essentially asking her, this is particularly at page 216 of our appendix, she was being asked to be dishonest, to cover things up. Officer James, this is at page 196 of the record, confirmed that it appeared to him that Ms. Jackson was attempting to coerce Ms. Boulding-Reed and to cover things up. The other important thing to add is that Officer James's testimony is absolutely not hearsay, because sure, he put in a statement, but he also came in and testified in court, and this is at several places in the record, but the one I have noted here is page 195 of our appendix, and through his testimony after that, Officer James testified directly in court that Ms. Jackson instructed Ms. Boulding-Reed to say if I was excused, you know, tell them if they asked if I was excused, say yes. The other thing I would add is that, two other quick things to add, which is that Director Vernon also testified to that fact. He testified essentially that Ms. Jackson told a story to him that was consistent with the story that she told to everyone else. He testified that when he spoke to Officer James and Ms. Boulding-Reed directly after the incident, that both of them, and this is at page 226 and 228 of the record, that all of them reported to him both of them reported to him that Ms. Jackson had instructed Ms. Boulding-Reed to confirm that she had been excused from class, to confirm this story. While that didn't come, Director Vernon was not there, he certainly can report on what the witnesses in this context, which is an administrative context and not in district court, can report on those witnesses, and that just further confirms. The last point I have on this issue, Your Honor, is just that this is not a case where the judge ignored this evidence. The administrative judge at A21 of our appendix discussed a strong analysis of these issues. And to her credit, she made clear that, yes, Ms. Boulding Reed's testimony differed somewhat from Officer James about the extent of what Ms. Jackson has said, but she concluded, and reasonably so from the evidence, that the point of the story, as Your Honors noted during opposing counsel's remarks, was that Ms. Jackson was instructing Ms. Boulding Reed to say yes, regardless of the truth, and that was heightened by the furtive movements that Ms. Boulding Reed observed and the implication of the just say yes. And that's certainly sufficient to support the charge, which involved allegations that she was acting in a way that was unbecoming to an officer and had asked Ms. Boulding Reed essentially to be untruthful about the issues surrounding her attendance and training. So unless there are further questions, I'm concluded.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hannon, you have 3 minutes left, and I'll restore you back to 4 in the event that you need that much time.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. The issue of what happened with Boulding Reed presupposes that Corporal Jackson on the 14th told Rivera and Solomon a different statement about what happened than she told Solomon initially. She told Solomon initially, "I didn't know that I had the training," and then went up. Now, when she went up to them and gave them the documentation that showed the breathalyzer tests, that was because on the 14th, she thought Rivera and Solomon were accusing her of not going at all. And unbeknownst to her, they took that information as some kind of evidence that she arrived at 1107. Obviously, that's the reason for the lack of candor. My position is that Corporal Jackson said that never happened in that conversation. I never told them that I went and was excused. Why would I? Because you see the 3 different times that were there. She would have to be profoundly stupid to tell them that she went and left and was excused, because there were 2 other officers who were there. They were interviewed by James. They told James she was there. The problem here is that there was lack of communication on the 14th when Rivera and Solomon and Vernon listened to her and saw these printouts, and they thought she was saying that she was there at 1107 and was there through 1120 and then somehow was excused and then encountered Solomon and went back. It's not possible, and it's profoundly stupid for her to do that. And therefore, that's why it's important that counsel for the government never asked Ms. Boulding Reed, "Did she tell you to say that you excused her?" It didn't happen. You can't allow Ms. Boulding Reed's testimony here to be trumped by everything else in the record. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. Our next